Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Wario Will.
On the eve of a Pokemon release, there's only one thing that's kind of going through my mind right now is, I'm sorry, I'm just completely obsessed with Death Stranding right now. I'm sorry. I know
Oh,
this is a
gosh.
Pokemon, like a Nintendo podcast, but I'm sorry. Death Stranding has got my head right now. I have come to understand the Death Stranding of Hideo Kojima.
I was expecting a musical clip, and I was expecting a musical clip, and yet nothing happened. And then he starts talking Death Stranding, and I'm just like, oh dear gosh, Will.
I was like really thinking about like me I don't know I have another music clip but like but the past I mean again we did something I did this path for the past two podcasts I was like is there a good clip to go with the Pokemon Midnight release as well as Death Stranding I was like nothing really clicked in my head during this work day sadly enough.
No, I mean, but do you really understand the game? Because like I saw the reviews, and it's just like everyone's like either you get it or you don't, which usually is a Kojima thing. But you think for his first major solo title that he would try and make sense.
It's definitely an acquired. There's no doubt about an acquired taste. I mean, I'll definitely talk more regarding to what have you been playing, but it is clearly an acquired taste. And personally, for me, I get it. I mean, like some people may not get it. I mean, that's totally fine. But personally, for me, I totally get what he's going for.
Well, not to leave him stranding. Here's Tellius Tyler.
There was so much momentum. Todd, like with his hello, I'm Triforce Todd, really brought the energy.
Thank
And
you.
then it just slowed down because Will started talking about Death Stranding, which you can't spend 3 seconds on. It's just impossible. It's just too big of a topic.
Oh boy. All right, well, like Will mentioned before going off in a completely wrong publisher topic. This is the eve of Pokemon Sword and Shield, a game many years in the making if you really think about it. And we're going to be talking about this a lot today, including during our main event and in the news. But we're going to start off with what have you been playing? So, for me, I'm going to start this off because I want to talk about not just what I've been playing, but what I've been seeing. Because if you follow me on Twitter at Guardians underscore comic, you will know that I was at Grand Rapids Comic Con in Grand Rapids, Michigan this past weekend. And I just want to say to everyone who I saw there, thank you very, very much for making me a part of your weekend. Thank you for supporting everyone who was there. And thank you for having such wonderful, wonderful cosplays. Because I saw so many great cosplays over the weekend. Just to highlight a few that I saw not one, not two, but I believe three Super Mario Maker 2 Marios, which is a first for me, to be honest. I saw a couple Zeldas, and I saw who was the was it Hilda, the Princess of Hyrule?
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes,
Hilda,
I
Hilda,
saw
Hilda.
a gorgeous, like in regards to the elegance of the outfit, Hilda. I mean,
Oh,
I'm
so you're
talking.
saying that the young lady in the costume was.
I didn't get to see her. I only saw the outfit from behind, and I saw the staff. That's how I knew it was Hilda. So she did not come by my table. And I'm trying not to say like, oh yeah, she was smoking, because clearly, no, I didn't get to see her, but the outfit that I saw was clearly had a lot of time, effort put into it, and the staff was like straight out of the game. I swear it was awesome.
That's sweet.
But yeah, so we had a Hilda and a ton of Fire Emblem cosplayers. It was really great, good. But the ones that stood out to me was I saw a Claude.
Yeah,
I
sweet.
saw an Edelgard hoodie, and are you ready for this? I saw Time Skip Dimitri.
Yeah, that's
Oh,
awesome. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
If I were to
like
ever do a cosplay, it would be of Time Skip Dimitri. Like
I would do Ike,
100%.
obviously, but no, this young lady who did Dimitri was just she had the fur coat, the eye patch.
Yeah, you gotta
It
have the
was
eye patch.
yeah,
You have
it
to look
was
like you really just rolled out of bed, though. That's like, okay, good. Yeah, that's
Okay.
a critical factor.
Right. Now I clearly forgot a few. I found an Isabelle with an axe.
Of course, of course, of course, of
And
course.
you thought the villager was scary. I saw this one was my personal favorite. Apollo Justice.
Oh.
Yeah, and they actually modified their briefcase to be the court record. Like complete with the button and everything. And then I had there was these this pair of cosplayers did both versions of Byleth. Ooh. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. So that there was a lot of amazing cosplayers at Grand Rapids Comic Con, and to all of you I did not see, I apologize if I didn't mention you. Hey, you didn't come by RS Alley, so that's not my problem. No, I appreciate all cosplayers. I have a lot of friends who are cosplayers, and seeing your amazing works just means a lot, because I know you put in a lot of effort to it. So congrats to you all, and to all the cosplayers that I saw. Anime, lots of Disney. Like, there was a great Moana and Maui
Oh,
pair
that's
that was
cool.
cool. Saw a couple of Game of Thrones characters, including an amazing Cersei season 8. Still glad Cersei died though. And just great stuff. Now as for what I've been playing, that would be Luigi's Mansion 3, not surprisingly. I am very, very close to the end. I am at like floor, I think I said I was on 13 last time I checked. So there's 15 floors, so I'm getting really, really close. This game is both fun and frustrating at the same time, because at times they're trying a little too hard to be clever, but at other times it's just their cleverness is evident in both the boss fights, how they handle certain things, the portrayal of Luigi. I mean, how many ways can you make Luigi be scared? And they answer that question in droves. I mean,
I
seriously,
see, I see,
it's like every time, this is not a spoiler, but every time you come out of the elevator to observe a new floor, Luigi's scared. And it's just like,
I see.
how can you show him 15 different ways being scared? And they do it. It's like, okay. And I'm having a lot of fun. I'm going to do my best to be done by tomorrow. I'll probably fail, but I'm not going to pull a Fire Emblem. I'm going to finish Luigi's Mansion 3, and then I'm going to jump into Pokemon, because I want to beat this game. I don't want to leave myself hanging, but there's a lot of fun in this game. And the level design is top notch. I mean, I was worried about how the hotel aesthetic would look, but it clearly played very, very well, and I'm grateful for it. It's a fun title, and we're going to be talking about Luigi's Mansion 3 a little bit later in the show, but if you haven't gotten it yet, we highly recommend it. And our review, again, our review has is already officially up via another friend of ours here on the Outer Haven. So we hope you'll check it out. Oh, and I'm playing Fire Emblem Heroes, obviously, but nothing big happening there outside of just getting orbs and waiting for the next banner.
Right. It's pretty quiet for a while. Even though they have sort of the book three ending, it is like
Oh
okay,
yeah.
we'll just wait. It's not really is kind of like ended off a bit of a while, like a
Yeah, we'll talk
like
about
a
that in news, but
sure. Okay.
all right. So Will, how about you? What have you been playing? And I swear to God, if you go 10 minutes on Death Stranding, I'm gonna have to beat you.
I'll try to cut it to five. So yeah, overall during this past week, ever since, like, I have been going head first into Death Stranding on PS4, Hideo Kojima Games solo project. And okay, it's again, even though I have so much time, it really there is a lot of time to like really hard to describe it in detail. Like, the best way I can really say it is indeed a Amazon delivery simulator. You are a delivery man, you are a porter, and you're supposed to like deliver like literal packages to one side of the world, actually going from America to reconnect America. It's the commentary from Kojima is like very meta. It's very like it does make some parallels regarding to the modern world of like, yeah, basically connecting America, even though you have like all this technology, but again, at the same time, you're also like very disconnected. And like in Death Stranding, it's kind of like a bit more in that kind of example. Like, the Stranding has happened, that the BTs, it's a lot of things that's really hard to describe. You just have to play it for yourself. And even if you play it's still hard to describe. You don't know what the heck's going on. But there's BTs, there's BBs, there's Guillermo del Toro, there's Mike Mick Mickelson, which Matt Mickelson, which is like, yeah, great cameos of all these great actors. But overall, like, yeah, it is basically Amazon delivery simulator. But basically, like, I don't know. The also one thing that's very interesting, because Kojima said it was gonna make a new genre kind of game, a strand kind of game, a strand genre, basically like a subtle, an indirect multiplayer game, because you can actually help our players out in your game. Because, like, for example, I made a bridge in my game, and anybody else can also use that bridge in their game as well. So, like, it's an indirect multiplayer, and Anything you build, anything you like create, it can only affects helps the players out, helps the players in their own game, which then you it basically give you likes. So if you want to go with like something similar parallel to like YouTube, yeah, like it, you do all those things for likes, you do things for the heart on Twitter. It's like, yeah, everything you do, you get likes, and
That's
again, it
one of
drove.
the coolest ideas I think I've seen in the game, is that fact that some of the stuff that happens in your game will affect other people's games. I think that's very smart.
Right. I'm currently on like the second map, and I built my highway during a rugged terrain, and everyone's been using my highway that I built and just like giving me likes overall. So like, yeah, like it's very similar to like the YouTube mentality. Like you, what you have to do, and you basically become a addict for likes. So, but it's kind of again very interesting topic. But again, I'll try to cut it short. But basically, Hideo Kojima's game of Death Stranding is like very journey-esque, as I mentioned before. Like it's very journey. It's just like you're alone. You gotta worry about these strange creatures called the BTs that like they try to like get you to you. But again, it's a solo journey. Yet at the same time, you're not by yourself. You are helping out other people. You are like get connecting to people around the world as well as like in the game. It's very connecting. Is it fun? There definitely are moments that I enjoy myself and
Sorry. It's just the way you said it, it's just everything. No, I haven't played this game. I haven't played it. I want to get it because you need to experience it to make to form an opinion. But I have not heard one person say, "Yes, this game is actually really fun." Everyone's like, "Well, is it
that's the
fun?
biggest debate. That is the big debate. I agree with that. Like,
It's a
is
video
it
game. It better
fun
be
per
fun."
se? Is it
Well,
fun?
hold on. I would disagree that there are some games that you could argue aren't designed to be fun, like in the overall like euphoric sense. Like you play Smash Brothers because you want to have fun with your with these Nintendo characters, but then there are like certain horror games where you want to be scared
Yeah, but it's like it's
and
this. You're still having it's still fun, and it's like
eh.
there's a different. I see what you're. I see where you're. What you're trying to
Or
say.
like
I
the
get what
Nintendo
you're
philosophy,
saying. Maybe I
or
could have been more pointed in what I was saying. But there are definitely different levels of fun, and I'm sure. Yeah, you go ahead, Will. It just it seems like the game tries to create an environment that is interesting.
I mean in terms like example Nintendo's philosophy of like games are meant to be fun, like Reggie Fils-Aimé said, then like I personally feel like I had some good moments. I enjoy like the tense moments of like trying to track BTs, trying to like build bridges. It's like I have my moments of like it's very zen, no doubt about that. Like fun, I definitely have my moments, including like riding my bike or just like getting through this, like just basically making people happy. It's kind of like it's that. So there is an element of fun. I mean, it's not like the fun point like Luigi's Mansion 3 or so, but like I definitely have my moments. So, but again, it's very debatable if it's like the game's fun or not. So again, it's a very split game. I can see the opinion splits between both sides. But for me, I really enjoyed Death Stranding, and like if you get a chance to definitely try it out, like especially if it's in a bargain bin, it's definitely no other experience like it. So definitely, I definitely try it. Recommend it.
That was a
Okay.
really smart point, I think, that you when you mentioned the Reggie Fils-Aimé's game should be fun. That was what I was trying to say, just less eloquently. Like Nintendo would never be would be caught dead making this game. They would never make a game like this.
Well, I mean, I think that's the wrong thing to say because Nintendo has done some games where you're like, they really did that,
What,
and like they
name one.
allow certain games to be made for their systems, like Bayonetta 2, which is clearly far more, suggestive and risque than
But Nintendo
anything they
didn't
would dare to
make that
make.
game. Nintendo didn't make that game. And
But
that
they allowed
Bayonetta
it. They allowed it to be
published
made
it.
for
They
their
published.
system
They published.
specifically. Right, but
They
I mean,
published.
one, I'm talking about Nintendo developing the games, but two, Bayonetta is also a very fun game. Like
Well, that's a doubt of that.
it's a different, it's not a Death Stranding type of game. It's an action game. Things are happening all the time. Death Stranding, from everything I've read, is a very slow it's a think piece in a game. It's very very artsy, and I'm
Right,
sure
right,
like
right,
I
right,
want
right,
to
right.
play it. I really do. Like I sound very negative about it, and that is because everything I've seen, bef like with the build up to the game, Kojima just really rubbed me the wrong way with like the we're not telling you what this game is. It's an experience. Like I just all of that stuff. It almost seems snobby to me. But I still
like the Peter
really,
Molyneux effect.
Yes,
like the Peter Molyneux
exactly.
effect.
It's like, oh, well, what he said about American audiences not being smart enough to appreciate the game was well, definitely what I
I
would
think that
call
was a bit of a
snobby.
mistranslation
So,
regarding to that, I feel.
well, okay, well, perhaps that's incorrect. I'll have to look into it. But I saw the headline that was saying that, and the quote that was saying that American audiences aren't. It's above a first person shooter, so maybe American audiences don't understand those things. But yeah. So yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad we talked about it, even though it's a Nintendo podcast.
Well, again, you never know. Like Kojima could work again. Kojima and Sakurai are best buddies, and from what, I don't know. I still gotta check out if Sakurai is in this game, so I need to double check.
It's Kojima. It's just one of those, it's just one of those things. But I know I won't play this game. A, I don't have a PS4, and B, I honestly have no interest. I don't know.
It's an acquired taste. Again,
It is
it's
an acquired taste. I mean, and I've played, for the record, for all you Kojima, sans out there, or stands, or sands, if you want. I could go Undertale. I don't mind. I have played Metal Gear. I have played the original trilogy on the PS2. It was actually a Christmas gift that I asked for. Loved the series. Regret not getting a PS3 so I could play Metal Gear Solid 4. But, it's just one of those things. But I just, after everything I've seen, I've watched some of those trailers. It's just like, it's so weird. It's just like, Kojima, I get it. You're an artistic genius and you're creative mind. I would love to meet you one day, but why can't you just make a game simple?
It's
And
like
then, like,
saying like
the baby is how you see the monsters, and you're creating bridges to reconnect the world. And it's just like, and then there's Norman Reedus, man, and it's like he's like the symbol of what we're. Okay, just stop. Okay, I'm gonna go back to Luigi's Mansion 3 now. All right.
It's like saying like water don't be wet.
I could quote Bruce Lee here, but we do need to move on. Actually, I do want to ask one question. It's actually a very important question that I absolutely have to ask you, Will. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Now you've been like, how many hours would you say you've put into, this is not the question, but how many hours would you say you've put into Death Stranding by far? Right now.
Right now, what I poured to Death Stranding is, ever since release, I did a whole full Sunday during that release, so
Just give me a
in
number. Gosh
20,
dang it, don't go Kojima on
I
me.
think I probably go full 30 hours at
Okay, that's
least.
fair. Okay. In that time period, do you think that Mads Mikkelsen has been portrayed well?
I feel he does very well. Like
Okay.
I know he's gonna be like on a character appears later on, but just like during the flashback memories of Matt Nicholson is like, yeah, that guy, he works well. He does his job well.
He is actually one of the best actors. He's actually one of the best and most underrated actors ever, especially in our current generation. And so when he came into Death Stranding, everyone was like, "Oh my gosh, Mads Mikkelsen! He's gonna be in Death Stranding!" So I was hoping that he got portrayed as the artistic genius that he is. So there you go. Also, his kids are big fans of Kojima, so he had to do well for them. Anyway, all right, Tyler, how about you? What have you been playing?
I have been playing a lot of Super Smash Bros. My Luigi's Mansion. I was hoping to try to play multiple games at once, and I fell on my face. Terry came out, so I was playing Smash, and I got just sucked right back into the well of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Just the catching up on the DLC characters is actually the main thing I've done, because as much as I wanted to have Banjo-Kazooie in the game, I really hadn't played as them a whole lot. A couple weekends I would sit down with my brothers and play some Smash with them, but outside of that, I hadn't really played messed around with the DLC characters enough. It's actually something that you had said before the podcast, Todd, that I'm very curious as to the audience at large. Like, how many people are going back and playing with all of these characters who bought the Fighter's Pass, and how many people the Fighter Pass and actually just aren't haven't revisited the game? I saw somebody say that it was a funny meme of every time a new DLC character comes out, the meme of Andy throwing Woody down and picking up Buzz. But it was like, first it was him throwing down Piranha Plant and picking up Joker, and then it was him throwing down Joker and picking up Hero. And then I thought, well, you know what? I don't know if that's necessarily true. I wonder how many people are playing as Hero and Banjo and Joker still. Like, I know it's just, I'm curious. But yeah, that game is still so much fun. They released patch 6.1 yesterday, which I thought
Yes.
was going to be a big balance update, and it really just took out the glitch we talked about last week of Terry grabbing
Oh,
Nana during that one
yeah.
specific move. So that was a bit of a dud in the Smash Bros. World, but I think the game is at a pretty healthy spot right now. And outside of that, I finished Yooka-Laylee in the Impossible Lair, which
Yay.
I absolutely loved. Like, so I started it. I thought it was good. I talked about it last week. I preferred the first game. I have to amend that statement. I think that Impossible Lair is better. I think I just straight up enjoyed it more. The second half of the game is phenomenal. I mean, the levels are so creative. It does hit the heights that Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze hit. Which is just, it's an astounding thing to say. Tropical Freeze, I would say, is the better game by a fair margin because it's consistently phenomenal. And it's a little bit more creative. Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair, they don't have any. I actually really like the barrel levels and the minecart levels in Donkey Kong. I know some people don't, but I love those. And Yooka-Laylee plays it safe in that regard. There's really no mix-ups. There are a few levels that you have to, like, the screen's auto-scrolling, or you're being chased by something, so you have to run fast through them. But for the most part, it's play at your own pace, just old-school platforming. And it's incredible what Playtonic put together, and I hope that it doesn't slip through the cracks on people who like 2D platformers, because if you enjoy the old Donkey Kong Country games, it's a must-play game. It really is. It's one of the best. I mean, I love all the DKCs. I would put Yooka-Laylee definitely above Donkey Kong Country 3, and gameplay-wise above the original. The original is just such a classic that it's not fair to... I would have to pick the original anyway. But loved that game. The Impossible Lair were really hard, even with all 48 Bs, too. I actually lost them all and, like, beat the boss in the last hit scenario. I figured I would just blow through it, but there was one section I just couldn't figure out how to actually get through, and I just lost, like, 15 Bs because I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to run through this and tank all the hits. But yeah, a really, really good game. I highly recommend it. And yeah, there was a plot twist at the end that just did my heart good. I was very pleased to see it.
You heard it here first, folks. Tyler has officially spoiled the Banjo-Kazooie, makes it their way into the Impossible Lair. Go home!
Yeah, that would be incredible. But yeah, so I definitely check that game out. Maybe I will write a review on it. Maybe.
Right after you finish Celeste. Moving on.
I decided. I will write an article on why Celeste is the best game of the 2010s. That will serve as my review.
That is bold.
Oh yeah. I thought you said that was.
I mean,
bold.
This will probably be a topic we do near the end of the year after we do our year in review in regards to the draft, but. You know, I'm seeing already a lot of posts about, like, what have you done in the last decade? And, you know, gaming has done a lot of interesting things in the last 10 years, including the rise of the Switch and, you know, everything else. So that's got to be a topic we got to talk about. Like, what are the best games of the decade? All platforms. And then Nintendo solely, of course.
Yes, so, for sure.
That'll be interesting. Oh, well. All right. So, obviously, Poke Fever is reaching its fever pitch, and with the early reviews out and everything else, there's been a focus on Pokemon, but there has been other news. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And we're gonna get started with Pokemon! You thought you could escape! You cannot escape! I appreciate everyone who got that Kenny Omega reference. You're welcome. Alright, so one of the big pieces of news. First off, the early reviews. Many of the reviews I saw were positive, including IGN. They gave it a 9.3, which still means Fire Emblem Three Houses is their best reviewed Nintendo game of the year. I saw comicbook.com. They gave it a glowing review. I saw another like 4.5, you know, 4 out of 5, 9 out of 10. So I don't know what you guys have been seeing. I've only seen a handful myself, but
I've seen quite a few, and you're right. The review scores have been generally positive. I broke my rule about not watching Game Explain content, and I watched their review, and Derek gave it a like. But if you watch their review, it seemed like a like seemed generous. It was a lot of complaining. I listened to a few discussions as well, and it does seem like this game is going to polarize people. Maybe not in the same way Death Stranding did, but but I definitely suspect that everybody's going to have a different takeaway after
Yeah.
they're done.
Clearly, Norman Reedus should have been in Pokemon. I mean, that would have made the game just so much better. Okay, I mean, clearly the storyline with Team Loud or Noise or whatever they're called, it's not the Kojima level of awesomeness that we would expect. Anyway,
Well,
so, but.
did you read all the reviews or did you just see the score
Oh,
stuff?
I only look at the scores because I don't
Okay.
want to be influenced.
Yeah, I figure that's the case. I mean, that's smart. I
Yes,
listening
and
to
that's why
those
I'm the host.
discussions is listening to those discussions, we're going to talk about our thoughts on it, what we're most looking forward to, and it's that affects my what I'm most looking forward to because I've heard a lot of things, so I like yes, I'm excited to break that down. So hang tight.
Yeah, so anyway, so the early reviews have come out, and the ones we've seen for the most part have been positive. Some have praised this as the next step in the franchise. IGN noted that they're streamlining some things to make it better, which I think is an interesting interpretation. But as the internet usually does, nothing could ever be quite that simple. Because not long after the reviews went out and gameplay started getting revealed by certain people who had gotten copies of the game, a certain hashtag got really popular. I'm talking like top of Twitter popular, and it's hashtag Game Freak Lied. Lied about what? Oh, host of NEP. Oh, I'll tell you, dear viewer. Well, if you recall, the reason that the national Dex is not going to be involved in all 1,000 whatever Pokemon we're at, do we have an official number now? I mean, I know like the Pokemon have all been leaked, but do we have a number of like Pokemon that there are created now?
Wait, how many that are made the game or how many are out there, period?
Period.
Oh, I it's something in the thousands.
Well, I obviously, but I was like, I was wondering if we had an official number now that the leaks are here. Okay. Anyway, so the reason that let's just say 1,000 Pokemon aren't in the game was because the art team was quote unquote making every single Pokemon, unique, better animated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So like that was a big sticking point was that they were saying that they were focusing on the animations, want to make everything look so crisp and everything. And a bunch of Twitter people, among others, obviously, basically took the models that they could find from Sword and Shield, broke it down, and stated in their own opinion, I can't confirm this because I haven't looked at it all myself, that Game Freak lied, that they didn't make all new models, that they were taking models from past games, or they were using bare bones models from, very old versions that, clearly haven't been improved that much, or that the animations from Pokemon Stadium were actually better than the ones in Pokemon Sword and Shield, and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And some of it did look legitimate. Like I saw one case where the animations of two trainers that were next to like a cliff and a ladder, their animation stopped when the character climbed the ladder, and that actually seems like, quite a bad animation move. But I can't speak to the other things. It's just hilarious how the vitriol and the hate that was just being spewed by these people, right, wrong, or indifferent, it was just kind of funny to see just how much they were like saying, Game Freak lied. They didn't like really give us the best Pokemon game ever. They were just trying to make work easier for them. And yeah.
We'll have to see when the game comes out. I'm sure there will be tons of breakdowns on this from unbiased sources because everything you see
Exactly.
now is definitely skewed one way or another. I'm seeing people who are like, "This game is it's gorgeous," and I've seen the videos. This game pales in comparison to Breath of the Wild visually. It's not gorgeous,
But it's not,
but
but that, and I hate that comparison because it's two different visual styles of
that's
game.
okay. That's true, but. It looked so like the textures are clearly not great. Like
Okay.
that's just an objective point. And you have people on one hand like who are defending this game like it's their mom, and there
My
are
mom's
others
Pokemon?
and then there are others who were like burning it like it's the devil. So like I
Ew.
just I you. I'm excited to get my hands on it to figure out for myself. I'm sure, as always, the truth will be in the middle.
It's definitely gonna be something regarding to the details. I'm not really don't really care much regarding to the trending of Game Freak Live. Like again, what even with regard to its whole announcement of when it first got announced, it just like it's definitely it's just that polarizing of the fan base. Like, is it gonna be good or is it gonna be not? Is it gonna be true? Is it gonna like again? the fan base itself is like really questionable to say at least. I mean, but again, that could be said for any kind of fandom.
It's so true. I mean, it really is true for every single fandom. I don't understand. I hate when people do this. Like, they did it to the Smash Bros. Community. They're doing it to the Pokemon community now. It's like, yeah, there are loudmouths on Twitter who are obnoxious. That's true for every single thing that people are fans of. There are people like that. Like, it's not a Pokemon thing. It's just a human being thing. There are people out there who are going to be like that for anything.
Yeah. And you know, like... And we acknowledge that I brought this up on like, you know, 10 or so podcasts ago. My friend Omega Sparks, who is a very talented musician, he was afraid of playing Fire Emblem Three Houses because he could see the texture work wasn't the best. And while he maintains, rightfully so in certain cases, that the texture work of, you know, so like some of the Castle Garrett
Mach, it's terrible, yeah.
It's very PS1 in some ways. He does not regret playing the game because the gameplay and the story and the characters are so much more important than the graphics in most cases. All right. There's obviously if you have a terrible looking game from top to bottom, you never want to play it. But that was not the case here. I love the character models, the cutscenes, everything, you know, beyond those basic textures was phenomenal. And so in his mind and in my mind and Tyler's mind and such. But, you know, so that just goes to show that, you know, you can have certain bad elements like certain textures or certain animations not living up to your expectations, but the rest of the game can still be phenomenal. So why are you nitpicking this thing?
Right.
Now, if the whole thing was pixelated, I would go stark raving mad because I'm like, this is the Switch. We know it can have beautiful HD graphics. Why is this pixelated? Like, you know, like I'm talking like, you know, characters and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, right.
But like I the game I hate the most in the Pokemon series is Pokemon Black and White 2. Because the way they did the Pokemon animations, every single one of them is pixelated beyond recognition at times. Like the camera zooms out when they're summoned and then it zooms in, which pixelates them. And that frustrated me to high heaven. And I'm like, why would you release something like this when it's clearly pixelated? So, like, if we had that in Sword and Shield, then, yeah, crucify them. Because this is like, you know, we would have waited another year. We wouldn't have been happy, but we would have waited so that you could fix this issue. But that's clearly not what's going on here. You're picking, like, very small things that clearly don't damage the game overall.
Well, there's definitely a difference between... So, I think if Fire Emblem Three Houses was a lesser game, like if it took away things that people loved about Fire Emblem, and if it really was that high school dating sim that it seemed like it might be back when we got those first couple of trailers.
Teacher, I love you.
Right. Then you would see people like, oh my gosh, tear this down. You know, this is not my Fire Emblem. Look at how lazy the graphics are. But that game is just the best. It's just such an unbelievable game that it makes up for it. I mean, there's not... The Fire Emblem community is another one that people hated. And now everybody in that community is getting along because the game is that good that it was able to unite the fan base. With Pokemon, the Pokemon being missing is the main thing. Like, that's what started all of this.
Yeah,
and
much.
There's people out there. My buddy Brett responded to one of our tweets about it. He is a huge Pokemon fan, and he said he would not buy this game because it's got to catch them all. And that's what he cares about most. We talked about it in our 150th episode.
Yeah. Cromcho is the same way.
Exactly. For some people, it's got to catch them all, and that was the huge strike, and yet... You know how diehard fans can be, even with something that big. If Fire Emblem Three Houses was a high school dating sim, I would have bought it because I would have needed to give the game a chance. But those people, you know, there are some people who fell off right then. Now there are other people who are hanging on, but everything they see, they feel so spurned that it's just an anger that's festering, and now it's coming out in vitriol on Twitter.
And I want to note something, and I usually don't call out other websites, unless it's like, you know, 7.8, too much water kind of thing. But... This I saw one thing, and it just frustrates me to high heaven. And not surprisingly, it comes from the people who did 7.8 Too Much Water. That's right, it's IGN. They made a video article opinion thing stating that Little Town Hero was a waste of time that could have been put to making Pokemon Sword and Shield better. Screw you, hippie. Alright? Seriously, that's not fair. That's not right. And that's not your call. They wanted to do something different. Whether you liked Little Town Hero or didn't. I liked it for the most part. You know, whether you liked it or didn't, that was their call to make that game. they wanted to do something different from Pokemon. They didn't just want to be associated only as the Pokemon company. Not the actual Pokemon company, but you know what I mean.
That assumes that they know how the company runs from the inside.
Exactly.
Too. Like, I don't know how large Game Freak is or how many people they had who would be working on Pokemon, working on that. They very well could have had, like, young developers who they are basically teaching or who are showing the ropes to working on Little Town Hero. Like, you don't know how the process went.
And they specifically stated that, you know, the Pokemon team is actually smaller than you think because it's made of the people who have done this for so long and that they trust these people to get the work done. So it's not like Breath of the Wild or Smash Brothers, which had hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, working around the clock to try and make this work. It's not that kind of thing with Game Freak. So they wanted to make something else. They decided to go make Little Town Hero. I don't know how well it's going to do. Probably not that well based on the news report we'll get to in a bit. But, you know, they want to do something different. And I applaud that. You don't get to say, you know, they shouldn't have made that game because they needed to focus on Pokemon. They clearly felt Pokemon was ready, one way or the other. They felt that, and if they don't know by now when a Pokemon game is done, then they shouldn't be making Pokemon titles, all right? And if that was the case, if IGN gave it like a 5.3 because it wasn't ready, that's fine. But clearly, your own website said that it was a really good game, so clearly Game Freak did something right. So I hate these kinds of articles. If you want to have an opinion on it, absolutely. Have opinions say, no, Pokemon could have been better and explain why it is. But you don't say that they shouldn't have made this game because they should have supported that one. That's not how this works. That's not how it should be written. And it's just wrong. And it frustrates me as a writer and as a fan because that's us in general saying that we know better than these game devs. And sometimes we do. That's just the truth. But other times we need to give them the freedom to make their own thing. And that's what happened with Little Town Hero. And they made some really cool stuff. It wasn't the best. And I'm sure I'm going to like Pokemon Sword and Shield more than my Little Town Hero. That's fine. But at least they tried. And I am going to give them that love and honor and respect for trying. Because most game developers don't. And that's how we get 1,000 sequels or spin-offs or, you know, terrible reproductions and, you know, clones of all these games. Because they're afraid of being creative.
I just can't really take, and I don't know about you, Will. I'm sure you probably agree. I'm not sure I can take anything Todd says about Little Town Hero to heart because he didn't beat it yet. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I can believe him because you have to finish the game.
Oh, says the guy who couldn't even beat Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
That game, okay, so there's a difference. Some games bad
that sure
you
it was.
Can't get through. You can't get through them because they're
and yet I
that
beat
bad.
It and gave it a 4.5. So who's really not
so
worthy of being believed,
I
Tyler?
I was not expecting that counterpoint, and that was a good one. I'm gonna say you won that round. I'm just gonna say you won that round. Accept the L, and so you know what? Your Little Town Hero argument—it's perfect. It makes perfect sense because I will certainly not give up my credibility to complain about how dreadful Xenoblade Chronicles 2 was.
And yeah, audience, just for the record, the reason I'm staying quiet is because, again, I've been known not to finish games, so I'm staying quiet, honestly.
Yeah, you better stay quiet, Will. You better stay quiet.
Yeah, how's your run of the Black Eagles going, Will?
Or Breath of the Wild?
Are you,
I beat Breath of the Wild.
Oh, that's
you.
Right. It only took you 2 years. So, anyway, so moving on to some more lighthearted information. If you recall, at the end of October, which somehow we're at the middle of November, what the heck is going on here? We had the release of Luigi's Mansion 3. And we can already confirm, via information of the NPD results for October, that Luigi's Mansion 3 was the third best-selling game in October. Now, I can already hear you panicking, like, wait a minute, how is Luigi's Mansion 3 only the third best-selling game? Well, there's this thing called Call of Duty, and that sells like a bajillion copies every year, no matter whether it's good or not. So yeah, that beat it. And then The Outer Worlds by Obsidian won out, which, given the hype that was behind that and the love for Fallout and Fallout New Vegas especially, I'm not surprised. But it should be noted that Luigi's Mansion 3 has had the best launch of the franchise so far. And Tyler brought up some interesting stats about the Luigi's Mansion franchise. Tyler, take it away.
Yes, so the first Luigi's Mansion sold 2.5 million copies, which I expected would sell more given that it was a GameCube launch title. Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon sold 5.45 million copies in its lifetime, which I know the 3DS had a big install base, but that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a high number for a game that, while critically acclaimed, did not fare so well amongst the players. I mean, a lot of people thought it was solid, but a step back from the original, I think, was just about the universal opinion.
I never finished it.
Me neither.
I got bored.
Yeah, same. I hated the mission structure so much.
Yeah. Anyway, so if it's doing better than Luigi's Mansion 1, it goes to reason that at least it got close to a million in sales. And that was just for one day.
Yes.
Remember, like, that's just for October because it launched on the
31st. Just for Halloween, too.
Yeah, it was just for Halloween.
That's a game that probably a lot of kids bought on November 1st because
remember, the 31st was on a Thursday, which is a very atypical day to go buy video games because you're at work, at school. So, yeah. But I did see some sales from Japan about the game, and Luigi's Mansion's already sold like over 250,000 copies over there. So I wouldn't have expected that for Japan. So, you know, throw in America and the UK where the Mario games do really, really well, I would be shocked if it's not already like over like 1.5 million, maybe even 2 million. I don't know. But we'll find out by December, January-ish when the quarterly results come out. But it looks very strong for Luigi's Mansion 3 right now. So. Oh, and Ring Fit Adventure was also in the top 10.
I was going to mention that before we moved on. That was awesome. I am so glad because that game, I'm not going to get it. It's not for me. It actually looks really good. Like, it looks like a Wii Fit, but perhaps better.
That's kind of the main draw. I'm kind of like want to try it. Aside from like getting Pokemon the dual pack, which is like last I checked was like $110 or $120. But yeah, Ring Fit Adventure seems like, again, it's again the next step from Wii Fit Plus is just like, again, it's engaging, it's an RPG, and what I'm seeing is like it works. I see a lot of people actually having legit fun with it. Like people comparing their power levels of like being level 99, like how high a level are you?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's pretty engaging. It's pretty engaging.
I'm tempted on a physical level because winter has come. For all you Game of Thrones fans. Winter is here, snitches! And so, like, I have now resigned myself to fully embracing my hermit life because it's cold and I don't want to walk 1,000 feet to the workout place. So, and yes, it really is that close to my house. And so, yeah, I'm lazy. What are you going to do? I'm a hermit. So I'm like, I should try and work out another way. And I've heard that the Ring Fit Adventure is honestly a good workout. So I'm tempted on like a physical level because I would do it because it's a game, but I'm also getting a workout. Like I loved doing Wii Boxing on a Wii Sports because it was exhausting. Like you do two matches on that thing and your arms are dead and I loved it. But I would be tempted to get it just because of, you know, I want to, you know, not get totally bloated, especially with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming, which is a big eating weekend period for me. So we'll have to see. But yeah, that's surprising that it did that well.
Yeah, and this is an uneducated opinion, but I do think that this is a game that casual fans who bought Switches might be getting for Christmas. Like, I don't know how many. I don't know the audience. I think that this is targeted at definitely adults, as Wii Fit was, but it could potentially be it could have legs through the holiday season.
Yeah. Sticking with NPD for one last thing, it has been confirmed that the Nintendo Switch is the best-selling console of October and continues to be the best-selling console of 2019. Here's my shocked face. Oh!
You don't say.
You don't. You don't say. Now, I would say, I know, I'm not sure if I can make that claim now. I was going to say that, you know, maybe November could be a stopping point because of Death Stranding, but if you already, you likely already have a PS4 if you're going to get Death Stranding, right? Plus, Pokemon is eternal, so that's not exactly the best thing to go up against. So, I don't know. So, you know, Black Friday is also another thing that they have to go up against. So, yeah, I guess the Switch kind of has, I would be shocked if they don't have November on lock between Pokemon Black Friday and everything else. So it's just they just have such a good lineup. You know, even if you haven't gotten everything, you're going to get it for holiday season, because that's when you play the games. It's when you're off work and off of school, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so. No, November is definitely Nintendo's month. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so to a story that fills Tyler's heart with joy. Sonic the Hedgehog. We officially can confirm definitively the Sonic redesign is real. And it's good.
It's so good. It's amazing.
Yep.
You could say that it has a nice ring to it.
Yeah. You could say that. You could say that.
But yes, a brand new trailer has come out. It's basically just a relaunch trailer. Let's be honest here. It's a complete relaunch trailer.
It was a totally different feel. The whole trailer was like it just was a totally I doubt that they changed the movie. It almost feels like they changed the movie.
Well, I was watching the Death Battle cast before this, and they were talking about, is that really what happened? Did they just change the model, or did they change the movie? And Ben brought up a good point. He's like, I think it would have cost too much money to reshoot everything. And if you watch the trailer, there are certain scenes that they obviously didn't recast, like, or recut, like some of the Jim Carrey Robotnik scenes. But, you know, I think like certain perspective shots maybe had changed a little, and then certain ways they did the Sonic bits, because clearly the model is so different that it would be nearly impossible just to match it up perfectly. But I doubt that there were heavy reshoots, because that would have cost money and time, and the actors might not have been available. So the voiceover would have been easy to change if they had if they added extra scenes like the Sonic baseball scene. That wasn't in the first trailer.
If they
added that and they needed Ben Schwartz to do VO, that would have been an easy, you know, one-day shoot. No problem. But yeah, I don't know. But the look is so good. It almost makes me... No, take that back. It does make me horrified when I see the comparison to the original model. And I'm like... Because, you know it was bad. But then you see it compared to, let's just call it accurate Sonic. And you're like, What the frick were they thinking?
Right. And yeah, apparently the internet has been going some with crazy conspiracy theories. Like, apparently that first thing was a publicity stunt and all that. Like, there's these conspiracy theories.
It's definitely sensible.
A lot of people were just like making their own theories. But again, this new trailer, including that end bit, like, I think they didn't show it in the American, but showed it in somewhere else. Like, oh, what time is it? Is The Rock president yet?
Yeah.
Like, I showed it in the Discord chat.
I didn't see that.
I typed it in the Discord chat. Like, yeah, is The Rock president yet? Honestly, I would not mind it right now. But
The answer is no,
Sonic. He's busy off being Black Adam in DC Comics.
Right.
It's just really great to see, like, again, why couldn't he do this in the first place? He could have avoided so much hubbub.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Now, you know how appalled and just emotionally devastated I was by that original design.
You were.
It was awful. I am not apologizing for that at all. I think that... So in this trailer, and I think in the first one, I just didn't even think about it because I was so angry about how horrible they made him look. They really were going for that Sonic is an alien idea. And I will say, the first design, I guess, looked a little more alien than this one did. But Sonic, that's not the angle for Sonic. Like, you don't really need to go with the Sonic is an alien. That's stupid.
Remember when they did that with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first Michael Bay movie? Like, they were supposed to be aliens, and then they had to redo it because the internet went crazy, and they made a line about how it would be stupid if they were aliens. You think they would have learned?
Right. But so, yes. But I saw somebody say that this might be the best model of Sonic ever. And the fact that I don't right away say, no, absolutely not, shows you how good it is. It's actually great. He looks phenomenal.
He does.
And on the movie itself. Let's talk about the movie itself. Because lost in how good Sonic looks is the fact that the movie, I'm not going to say it looks good, it certainly doesn't look amazing. You know, do you guys know Arlo on YouTube? Ironically, he's like a sock puppet that looks like it's marketed to kids. And yet somehow he has like the absolute best and deepest breakdowns of games. It's a strange dichotomy. Kids are smarter than you think, I guess. I love that guy's channel. Anyway, he was saying that the movie didn't look great to him, and I echoed his thoughts exactly. It's not like the movie suddenly looks really, really good. But there were some moments that were charming. That baseball scene
was
very funny. It was very funny. And it's definitely not, I think I may have said this to you guys, it's not the Sonic that I know and love. Like, he's not cool. He's not overly cool.
No.
He's very energetic and funny, and it's a different style meant to appeal to kids for sure. But there's potential. The Green Hill, the way they rendered Green Hill, that looked beautiful. I hope that they do more. Like, I hope that there are other Sonic locations in the movie. I would love to see a chemical plant. I would love to, like, just all the iconic ones would be great, because that depiction of Green Hill was lovely.
Yeah. For me, it was... This is really kind of funny, ironically, because when they're told when you make a trailer, you're supposed to try and grab their attention for 30 seconds. And the first, like, 30 seconds of the trailer, where it was just about Sonic and how, you know, him playing baseball, you know, on all the different positions and everything. When I first saw that was really, really intriguing.
Yep.
And then for me, it went downhill from there. So they got me in the first 30 seconds, and I watched the whole trailer because I needed to know if they redeemed themselves. And they did, but it was still, you know, incredibly cheesy. It was like Sonic came off as a child.
Yes.
When Sonic was literally built to be, like, teen angst. You know,
yes, exactly.
Sonic is not the guy to go and see the world's biggest ball of yarn. You know, he would go and unravel that ball of yarn as a dare, you know, or something else. And, you know, playing the baseball thing, yeah, that's totally Sonic. He would do that just because, you know, he could play every position.
Right.
But, you know, some of the other things, like riding in a truck and...
Sonic would
know,
make, like, a kind of corny joke about the biggest ball of yarn. You know,
yeah.
He wouldn't be like, man, you know, like he comes back and goes, oh, yeah, it was lame. Like, he wouldn't say, oh, it was lame. He would say, like, something. He would have some sort of a funny thought on it that you're like, man, if I was 10, I would think this is hilarious. If I was 15, I would think this is just cringe. And if it was being now that I'm 20, I appreciate the childlike whimsy of the joke.
Yeah. So it's just. You know, it just slowly devolved, and then, like, I saw some of the scenes with Robotnik, and was it James Marsden, I think it was. He was asking, why are you defending him? He goes, he's my friend! And I'm like, oh, gosh. The power... if I wanted the power of friendship, I would watch My Little Pony. Gosh, dang it!
That didn't work out well for Teddy in Westworld. I don't know if you guys watch Westworld, but he was trying to defend his friend Dolores. Things did not go well.
Fail. So, now... positives here, they listen to the fans, the redesign is good, and we can be grateful. The movie's still going to do horribly, though.
Oh, I'm going to see it for sure. Like, I have to now. I was so angry about how bad the design was, and I wasn't going to support it, that now that it's good, and I think this is where that conspiracy theory comes from, because there are a lot of people who feel the same way. Did you see the likes? It has more likes than the Rise of Skywalker trailer.
Really?
Yes.
I think it's just appreciation, like, that they owned up to their mistake, unlike Star Wars. I mean, sorry, that's another podcast.
And it's just kind of helpful one, because I believe, like, even the creator of Sonic himself says, like, they should put that extra scene, that original design of Sonic, in the Blu-ray cut. So, like, I wonder how it would be in the original movie. What was it supposed to be look like before the redesign? It's definitely going to be interesting once the Blu-ray comes out, but yeah, just seeing all this thing, Jim Carrey and everything. Like, of course, obviously, the story plot is not really the greatest of all plots. It's just typical crazy movie plot whatever. But heck, with Sonic, they redeem themselves, and who knows, perhaps we'll finally get that whole crossover gaming universe of Pokemon and Sonic or Mario. Who knows?
The extended Smash Brothers universe is coming together.
Yep, and then Pac-Man there's a waka 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 waka.
Yeah, Pac-Man movie would be awesome.
Oh no, it wouldn't.
We had one. It didn't work.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, let's not talk about it. All right.
Oh,
so...
Pixels with Adam Sandler.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, okay. So I'm not gonna count that, because I mean it was Adam Sandler. I mean, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. I mean, props for actually getting the creator of Pac-Man on the movie, but that's all the props you get. Oh gosh. Okay, let's move on. All right, so an interesting piece of information came from Nintendo recently, and it was about Link's Awakening. If you recall, we stated that in its first month, like not even a month, like 2 weeks, it sold over 3.3 million units or so, which is incredible for a game that first released 27 years ago. And according to Nintendo, a lot of the sales actually came from their bundling it with the Nintendo Switch Lite. They said that they planned for that because they both released on the same day. And a lot of people who got the Nintendo Switch Lite got the Link's Awakening, and they felt that that was because Link's Awakening was born as a mobile game on the Game Boy, and so it made sense to have it on the Lite, which is a purely mobile version of the Switch, and the attach rate for it is actually incredibly high. So,
yeah, that's not surprising. It's a good plan to release that game with that, again, childlike art style that I love. But, yeah, I'm sure that really spoke to the Switch Lite's target audience.
Yeah, so it just, I'm just glad, again, I'm glad I got the game. I'm glad I finally beat the game after 27 years. So good. But, yeah, and again, I'm just glad this title is doing so. It's easily one of the biggest surprises of 2020. We went from, you know, oh my gosh, this is coming out, to oh my gosh, this is coming out in September. Oh my gosh, it's really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very cool. All right, okay, let's get a little controversial here.
Cool.
Because Fire Emblem, almost had three houses. Fire Emblem Heroes recently technically ended their third book, which was arguably their darkest and most grim, which is saying something because the second book was actually full of fiery death. But in book three, we actually dealt with death. What are the odds?
Mm-hmm.
So they officially ended book three, and the ending was then, what do you want to call it, translated into animated trailer. And pretty much all of us agree that the animated trailer was better than the actual ending of the game.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's just like book two.
Yeah, they rushed it. It was like, okay, we gotta do this. And then it's like, okay, dead. You're dead. You're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go home.
It was awful, is what it was. It was just, I hadn't played Heroes for a long time, but I needed to see what the ending was. And I don't know, it's tough to tell a story when you're fragmenting it into such tiny pieces, and you're not, you know, there's no real presentation put into it. It's just like a flash of red happens when something bad happens, and a flash of white happens when it's a flashback. But yeah, I was extremely underwhelmed. But like, they tried to pull like a Awakening Robin, like when it's like, oh, the Crom really got, and then it's like, oh, just we predicted your plan this whole time. Here at the end, they were like, oh, just kidding, she was never gonna do that. But it was such a random slew of events that just made no sense. And then they go to like a Fallen timeline at the end, where it's like one of the worlds where, Hell won, and it was just like, I don't get, like, this is trying to be deep, and it's just really failing. It's just failing horribly.
Yeah.
It's definitely like an that kind of low point, that when the entire campaign on the mobile game is just like whole lot of text, and then at the final thing we have an animated cutscene that actually feels much more polished than the campaign itself. Is like, okay, intelligence systems, I mean, okay, you did something. It was bad, and yeah, now we're like getting ready for the next book. It's like, okay, like, can you actually do better? I mean, heck, book two, I actually thoroughly enjoyed book two, but book three, that was supposed to be, as I said, supposed to be deep, dark, angsty, and a whole lot of grief. But yeah, just kind of like ended like that. It's like, kind of upsets that, like, really, what's the term? Basically pulled you under the rug, basically.
Yeah, book two was solid. The ending again was super rushed, but I actually thought book one was pretty good the whole way through. I thought book one was old enough, and then they just kind of dropped all the lingering plot threads of that. It was very weird.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was just incredibly rushed, and then it was like, you know, we gotta get the ceremony, and then we had to deal with what was his name, the evil Crom.
Yeah, Leaf.
Yeah, Leaf, right. Leaf and Thrasir. And, you know, then we dealt with them, then we didn't deal with them, and then they were back, and then it's just like, okay, we have the right, but will this work? And we need Ear. No, Ear's a traitor. No, wait, now she's not a traitor. Oh, we, I screw you, Mom. And like, oh, no, you, I wasn't your mother. It was a lie the whole time. It's like, you were born from dragons. And she's like, she didn't know this. How?
Well, and then in the end, she's like, Mom, you're dying. I'm so sad. It's like, she killed you 100 times. She's killed everyone. She has no heart. There is no way you would feel this way. There's no way you would feel that way. It was, that was hilarious. It was just, it was comical how bad it was.
Yeah, so.
And minor complaint.
And?
Minor complaint.
Only a minor one. Ooh, wow.
The idea, because I get, you know, the idea of heroes, you're bringing in characters from the past, and like the logic was never good to begin with, that like they're under contract to fight for you. I don't think if Ephraim was under contract to destroy all living beings, he would do it. I think he would take whatever the punishment was. Having Ephraim and like Tethys the Dancer, like it was. It just, you couldn't have had a more anticlimactic ending. If you were going to do that, maybe do another one of the Fallen Heroes banners where, like they did with Hardin and Robin. Like, give us like some villains as the banner, and then it fits into the story. It was awful.
I think they are trying to emphasize that the idea of a contract isn't just like a verbal one. It's like a soul contract. You know,
I think
like
Ephraim would give up his soul before killing all living beings.
Yeah, I mean, it's suspension of belief. It's what
it,
you
it
do.
It is, and that's why I said it was nerd.
I mean, and here's another way of thinking about it. If you were seriously summoned from another world to this world of Oscar, and you're spent, let's just say, I don't know, a year, 2 years here helping them fight whatever, don't you think that one of these characters is going to fall in love with another character from another world?
Yeah.
You're talking about it. I'm sorry, like the way you just described it, you're just pretty much talking about every single isekai out there in the anime manga world right now.
Leave it to Will to bring this back to anime. But like, yeah, there's your other suspension of disbelief, is that, you know, all these characters are together. Are you telling me like one of them isn't gonna fall for one another, and then they're gonna want to go back to their other world, not their own world, because they want to be with this other person? So it's one of those suspension of disbeliefs that we just have to accept and move on. Accept it and move on, Tyler.
That's what I did. I accepted and moved on.
Sure, I can hear you stew it. I can hear it. It has a sound. It goes like this. Sonic. No. All right. Finally, a very interesting piece of news. This is, for the record, this is a full-on rumor. But there is an insider for Nintendo that has delivered a lot of definitive news and has been right. His name is Sabi. And they have stated that Breath of the Wild 2, which we know is in development, is planning on being released in 2020. This is based off not his inside information, but actually the internal calendar of Nintendo. They have stated that, according to that, apparently, though, they have stated that they're going to try and release in 2020. Now, granted, there's always chances for delays. We honestly don't know how far the game was in production when we got the trailer at E3 2019. But if it's coming out a mere 3 years after Breath of the Wild, that's both interesting and, I don't want to say concerning, because that would be, you know, casting shade on Aonuma, who has proven time and time again he's a legend. But
it's going to be amazing. I mean,
well,
I see what you're saying. Concerning, I know why you don't want to say it. That's really what I was going for there, was I get why you wouldn't want to say concerning, because you have faith.
I have faith in Aonuma.
It would be, it would make you question the scale of the game.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes.
Given how expansive Breath of the Wild was. But this goes back to, and now, listen, it's probably not going to happen, but I was a day one truther that it was coming out in 2020. And that's because I believe in a game as big as Breath of the Wild. I'll say it again for those who missed that episode. A game as big as Breath of the Wild, there are so many ideas that don't make cut. So many ideas that are great ideas that you're just like, that just doesn't quite fit. And I think that is why this game would be able to be developed that quickly, is because they have, it's the same engine. It's the same graphics. It's really a Majora's Mask style sequel. Production-wise, at least. And I know it's going to take, I understand why it would take a long time, and I do agree, 3 years does sound fast, but I think that the assets are there, and it's really just a matter of putting them into the game.
Yeah. The real question here is how far are they pulling a Majora's Mask here? Because when you think about it, the reason Majora's Mask worked is that they took the basic assets from Ocarina of Time, with like Link, Epona, the Skull Kid who was in the Lost Woods, and they just, you know, they made it work. They made it bigger, and then they made Termina, you know, big but also small in context. So they didn't have they made it in a year. Like that was the joke. It was that a lot of the storyline with like the time traveling elements was about reflecting their timetable for actually making this game, and it worked out. But there's a lot of rumors about, you know, what will the game be about? Will it be this, you know, kind of underground world like they were kind of teasing, you know, what is Ganondorf going to be like and all that? So if they play it the right way, like you said, if they just transplant the world and then just change certain things, that would be fine. My question is the shrines, because they obviously can't just rehash those because that's no fun. So are you telling me they're going to recraft all of those shrines? Or I don't think that's a wise idea, because they weren't exactly the most fun thing about Breath of the Wild. It was actually at times kind of annoying, but you know, we did it because we needed the heart pieces so we could get the Bloody Master Sword. But and then of course there's the ancient beasts, you know, the sacred beasts, sorry, you know,
divine beasts,
but... divine beasts, thank you. Ancient, sacred, divine, whatever. Words, I'm a writer and the host, clearly. But you know, how are they going to recraft that? It's the small questions, because I can understand them just repasting the world and changing certain things up. I dig that. I think that they can make that work. But how are they going to define the little things to make it feel like a true Breath of the Wild 2, not just a rehash?
It's definitely something to, yeah, like I can understand your concern. Like, have they like added enough to guarantee it to be like warrant it to be a sequel worthy of Zelda? And especially with Breath of the Wild, is like, it's definitely a question dude that can't help but think about. And I don't know, for me, I feel like if they have I am a believer that if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. Like, if the formula is still good but basically add on to it while also, like, I don't know, make some new ideas with the current ideas, I feel like then I think it would warrant to actually be a proper sequel. And with Inuma at the helm, I feel like it's definitely, like, I think they're in good hands, I feel like.
We'll just have to see. I mean, again, I trust Inuma. Inuma knows how to make a quality Zelda game. That's been proven time and time again. And if it's like late 2020, like, you know, this is like their November, December title.
I suspect it's the holiday title.
I would hope so too. I mean, again, they launched Breath of the Wild in March because it coincided with the launch of the Switch, which was, you know, their best idea. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, and again, this isn't like 100% confirmed just based off this insider, and insiders have been wrong plenty of times before, but it just makes you think.
It does. It certainly makes you think. And that makes me think, Mario Odyssey, when is that sequel coming? I mean, because again, it's another game where there's just so much in it that I'm sure there's even like three times as much that got cut. And half of that is, or a third of that is good idea that could be in the game. So
yeah, and honestly, 2020 is going to be it. That sequel I could see being made in 3 years easily. Because of like because it's a platformer, and that's easier to craft versus a massive RPG world.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see. All right. One thing we won't have to see for very much longer is the clock as it counts down to the launch of Pokemon Sword and Shield. In fact, Will, aren't you going to try and do the midnight launch?
Again, since I have a convention right after this, like, I'll be attending, I'll be going out in the morning at Nintendo NY to pick up the dual pack of Pokemon Sword and Shield, as long as my new amiibos. So yes, I'll do that and then head to my convention.
There you go. He's going to Anime NYC, if you didn't. So
I'm risking not getting a Chrom amiibo to be here recording, because if I got in line, GameStop opened at 7, they were letting people in for a Pokemon tournament before the midnight launch. If that Chrom amiibos that they have are gone, I'm blaming you guys.
You do that, Tyler. You do that.
I know what I will. You know what?
Okay. Anyway, so we're almost to the launch of Pokemon Sword and Shield, and we are very, very excited. But what are we most excited about for these new games? We're going to break it down in a Nintendo discussion. All right, Tyler, I'll start with you because I'm very curious about what you have to say. What is, if you had to pick one thing that you were most excited about for Pokemon Sword and Shield, what is it?
Okay, so this, I'm not proud of this answer. I'm really not proud of it. But what I'm most excited for is seeing who was right. Are the haters and the losers right? Or are the people who absolutely are just fanboying over this game? I can't wait to see who I side with, because we've seen so much about this game before launch, but not as much as many other Pokemon games, especially Sun and Moon, where everything was revealed. We have a decent idea of what to expect going in. That being said, as you always say, you never know until it's in your hands. So I can't wait to play it, to think about it, to honestly to write about it. This is such a huge game that's going to kind of determine the future of the series, in my opinion. It's the first one on home console. It's going to the way it's received, both commercially, critically, and through fan opinion on quality, it's going to dictate the future of Pokemon. And I'm very excited to see what this game is and to be able to actually develop informed opinions about it rather than just kind of taking little tidbits from what I see from other people or from what I'm seeing from gameplay videos and all that stuff.
Cool.
Okay. Okay. Will?
Well, for me, I'm just kind of like, as a casual guy, like, I haven't touched Pokemon in years. And again, the last one I touched about was pretty much Ruby and Sapphire back on the Game Boy days, and just going back into it is like, I'm curious like how much has changed. I know with the whole national effects and all that, sure, but I just want to see like how much have they learned from these many generation gaps that I've taken not been part of all these years. Like, again, I have not known about the Alola regions. I have not known about, like, Black and White, all these other games. So, like, going into this new region again, I wonder how this, like, going back into, like, a fresh start. So, like, the new Pokemon, the new remix version of, like, Sirfetch and all that. And, again, like, all these years, like, I don't know. I know I feel very old right now saying this, but, like, again, like, how much has changed since then? Like, I used to be with it once, but now it's not that what I thought was it. Isn't it anymore, and now everything's all weird and scary to me. So I can't wait to see, like, what's going to change.
All right. For me, I just, one of the reasons I love Pokemon so much is the awe and wonder of it all. The awe and wonder of being in a new region. The awe and wonder of seeing a new Pokemon. And especially since I have not looked at the leaks and the trailers have only revealed some of the brand new Pokemon, I look forward to going into the Galar region and just seeing what is waiting for me. You know, like, what will be the first evolution of Scorbunny and the second evolution? And, you know, how does Team Loud play into this? And all
Team Loud.
Isn't that what it's called?
It is. It's just funny. It's just
okay.
That's
what I was like, don't do that. I'm like, did I say it wrong? I thought it was like Team
no,
Loud.
No, it is. It's just hard to believe that that's what they settled on, was Team Loud.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after a while, you run out of really cool names. All right. So
they have what? Team Rocket, Team Magma, Team
Magua, Team Aqua. Galactic, Team Plasma. Team Flare.
Team Skull was good. I really liked
Skull.
Team Skull.
Skull was unique, and yeah. I loved it. And in the anime, they really made Guzma look like a boss. So
yeah.
But anyway,
there should be more verbs or adjectives or whatever part of speech.
Maybe next generation.
Now,
anyway,
now
so I look forward to see how that plays out. I love the wonder of it. And even though, quite ironically, during this podcast, I found out that I have a lot of work for tomorrow already, I will wait with anticipation so I can play the game and just enjoy it one way or the other. And, you know, to see the wonder of this new Pokemon world in 3D on a console for the first true first time ever in regards to the core RPG form. And I want that excitement again. And that's what I look forward to.
Well, I guess we should ask a critical question now that we are an hour and 20 minutes out of launch. It's okay. You guys can pick Rookie too. It's okay.
God. I'm really
going
to do this thing again. Really?
No, it's okay.
We can open this. Smash again.
I won't judge you guys. I won't hold it over against you that you at first were. You could say I was just kidding. We all needed to be different. So that's why it was all a bit. We're all going to pick Rookie as our starter, right?
No. Speak for yourself. I'm thinking Sabo, my precious little boy, thank
that's
you. Squirrel
Bunny, like the stupidest life. Pokemon of all time. Squirrel Bunny's kind of cool, but... It's not Grookey, but it's very cool. Unlike Sabo, which, again, might I mention...
Hey, spoilers, but I pretty much spoiled on regard to the whole Final Evolutions, and heck, your thing has bloody Tycho Drum. For me, like, the Final Evolution of Sabo is pretty much
No spoilers.
Yeah, I think I might have blurred that out. But I do want to apologize. I know some of our listeners are Sabo Squad. It's not a shot at you. I just think Sabo's stupid. I just think he's stupid. He's trash. I think another thing I'm excited for is the gym battles. The gym battles look really, really cool this time around. I've heard that they're similar to the last game in that they have gotten creative with how they approached it, which is very fun. I loved the island challenge in Sun and Moon. I know some people didn't. I thought it was phenomenal.
I loved
it. Great way to mix it up. Exactly. Yeah, you and I were of similar mind on those games. We really liked them. But yeah, the gym challenge, the environment looks great. The kind of arena aesthetic that we've seen in the grass and water gym, very, very cool. It does give a sense of grandeur to those battles. So I'm pumped for that. So that's another thing I'm excited for. What about the wild area, though? What are your guys' expectations for that?
I'm interested in trying. I bring that into like my idea of the awe and wonder of it all, because they clearly put a lot of work and effort into this. They clearly wanted this to be an area where you could both run by yourself and also play with friends via the Gigantamax battles. And
yeah, the raids,
thank you, the raid battles, that's really cool. I want to see what it's like, because this in many ways is what we envision when we think of a Pokemon world. We don't think of running through the grass and random encounters per se. We think of seeing a Pokemon going through the grass and go, oh, there's a Rattata, I should go and catch it, or there's a Magikarp, let's fillet it and eat. Kidding, but I want to see how that all plays out, and I don't know how well it'll work. That's why I want to get my hands on it, but I am very curious to see how it plays.
The potential is absolutely there for the wild area.
Right. And again, we're going to the wild area and including like some cities. Like, that's the one thing I'm kind of also curious about, like how they can interpret like all these different locales. Plus, again, with the gym trainer, the gym battles, like, if there is the personality, like, in some reviewers have said, like, is the personality there? Is it in terms of story itself, is it, like, also similar to the prior games? Like, that's one thing I'm also pretty curious about it myself.
I actually, going back to your gym battles thing, Tyler, I'm interested in that too, because, this is arguably the biggest they've ever gotten with the gym battles in regards to how they're designed, how they look, how they feel. They're trying to go for that, English soccer match kind of feel. The fans are just cheering you on no matter what. So that is something that intrigues me, and I wonder how that's going to play. And then to see how the Gigamax and the Gigantamax are going to affect it. It's intriguing to me. So
yeah,
well, it's gonna be a fun time.
Yeah, no, for sure. On the story, where are your expectations for that? Are you expecting something that was Sun and Moon good, or maybe one of the weaker generations?
Like the fact that you're trying to be that potential throne. Dethroner of like the champion who has never had lost a match in his life, that you are the one who's gonna basically destroy the Undertaker. Basically, it's kind of gonna be an interesting take. But in regards to like story, not really have high expectations, but these be sufficient enough, in my opinion?
It's a complicated thing, because as much as I love Pokemon, the Pokemon anime has always had better stories than the Pokemon games, nine times out of ten. You know, Sun and Moon was an example of them doing it right with Lily, and, you know, her fear of Pokemon, and then her love of, you know, Nebby, and then, you know, her Z form, which was adorable, and then, you know, your heart breaking when she left for Kanto to go save her mother. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought we were in love, you know, it's like, what's going on here? You know, that was big. But then other times, you know, they did basics, you know, the X and Y, you know, I like those games, but some things, like, weren't the best, and that's okay, because they supplemented it with, like, a whole bunch of characters that you kind of grew to care about. But I don't expect the world when it comes to these Pokemon stories in the RPGs, because I know that's not the thing that's going to get me going, but it is something that's going to keep me going, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It definitely does. Yeah, I think for me, this game's going to be hard to... I need to separate it from Sun and Moon, because I think that was probably my favorite Pokemon game. Just the originality, the story execution was great. It was perfect. It was not too much. It was just what you wanted out of a Pokemon story. So Sword and Shield have a lot to live up to in that regard. But I'm also hoping to see the Game Freak take some chances with transitioning to the home console. I hope that there are some surprises that are mixed in that you're like, wow, that would not have happened on the 3DS.
Yeah. All right, so to wrap up, what is one thing, when you're all said and done, and based on the impressions I've been hearing from certain review sites, they said that the gameplay is, you know, about as long as you would expect from a Pokemon game, like 40-plus hours, depending on how much you grind and all that. So when you're done with Pokemon Sword and Shield, what's the one thing you hope to take away from it?
Well, that's a good question.
I know, that's why I'm the host.
And I guess the one thing that kind of just want to take away from it is, again, can it basically capture the same memories that I've had when I first discovered Pokemon? Like, can it be that same, like, what brings, like, the new generation of Pokemon trainers into, like, into the fandom? Like, is this going to be the one that helps bring back old fans who have retired, like myself? Or, like, is this going to be, like, for the new generation of new kids? I don't know. But I feel like the one thing I want to take away from is, like, can it really, like, give you that same sense of wonder when I first discovered Pokemon?
Yeah, that's a good answer. I don't know, that's tough. I would really like to enjoy the changes that they've made to kind of make things better for competitive players. That's something I've read in a lot of the reviews. I played a little bit of competitive online in Sun and Moon, and it was fun enough, but I think it would be really fun to kind of use this game to kind of get into that Pokemon social world. I think it'd be a lot of fun to maybe not compete like at big events or anything, but I'd like to kind of get involved in the Pokemon scene a little bit more, and hope this game tempts me into doing that.
What I hope to take away is that, you know, and I kind of hope this for every generation, but that when I'm done, I have a Pokemon that I think about, that I like really enjoyed, and I can't wait to, you know, raise again or something like that. Most of the times it's the starters.
Yeah.
Like, if you give me a generation, I'll think of, like, my favorite Pokemon pretty close to off the bat, whether it be a starter, a legendary, or another Pokemon in between. And I don't know all the Pokemon there in the Galar region. I think we've only been exposed officially to 20, not including the leaks, obviously. So I look forward to seeing all these, you know, these new Pokemon and saying, like, oh, what are they like? You know, how are they going to be in battle? What do they evolve into if they evolve at all? And that kind of, again, going back to the awe and wonder, like, that's what intrigues me about Pokemon, is the mysteries of what I'm going to see. And I'm already in love with the legendaries, and that's cool and all. I mean, they're based off of weapons this time, so that's something hard for me not to love. But, yeah, I want to come out of it thinking, you know, there's this really cool Pokemon that I just love the design. I love, you know, having caught it or whatever. And, yeah, that's one of the reasons I would love to be in the Pokemon world, so I could get these Pokemon for real and, like, you know, be friends with them. But I can't, so I have to settle for capturing them and basically making them my slaves. Moving on. All right, so with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we did, in fact, ask you a poll question. It was a good poll question.
Which you don't have brought up.
No, of course I have it brought up. Why would I not have it brought up? I have it right here. Should news outlets report the Pokemon Sword and Shield leaks and those like them? Or should they keep quiet and allow players to be surprised? 58% of you said, yes, report the leaks and inform players. And 42% said no, let the players be surprised. That was an interesting split to me. I kind of expected it to be more no surprise to player, because I think I phrased it a little like leading towards that answer. But surprisingly, most people wanted to be in the loop.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I agree with them too, by the way. I'm a yes person on that one as well.
All right, so I do want to do a poll question this week. I'm going to keep it as basic as possible. Which of the Pokemon games are you getting? Sword, Shield, or both?
Oh, clearly the dual pack.
I'm going to get both eventually. I'm going to get one tomorrow, and then I'm going to ask for the other one for Christmas so I don't have to spend my own money. Spend my parents' money! Genius!
Yeah, for me, I'm pretty much buying it, like, for me and my cousin, who's the composer. So, again, it's a good value if you want to buy
for
two
you.
People, yeah.
Tyler?
I am absolutely just getting Sword. Like, I never understood buying both. I never got it.
Really? Interesting. Alright, so that'll be our poll question. Are you going to get Sword, are you going to get Shield, or are you going to get both? Do let us know, and let us know your thoughts on everything we've talked about here today, including, but not limited to, the Sonic the Hedgehog redesign. Do you like it? Do you think that Game Freak lied? Were you one of the people who got Luigi's Mansion 3 on October 31st like I was? And do you think Breath of the Wild 2 is going to be coming out in 2020? Do let us know, and we'll see you next week. So, for Tellius Tyler and Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but we are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.